Boom, we're on. Today's guest, we've got Big Baz Patterson.
Nice, and yours.
How are you, brother?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you.
Cheers. Thanks for coming on, mate. I know you don't do many interviews, but I've been trying to get you on for a while. And thanks to the good lady Tracy for making it happen also.
Yeah, she twisted me out.
So how you been?
I'm fine, man. I'm good.
Good, it's mate.
Taking each day as it comes.
Yeah, that's the best way. So from the toughest man in Britain to...
Yeah, I know.
I'm dropping that in there, mate. I'm all right, because you don't... And now you're doing a lot of homeless work, which is an amazing thing, you and Tracy. So, but we'll go right back to the start, Baz. Kind of where you grew up and how it all started.
Where do you want me to start?
Right back where you grew up.
Well, I was born in Burton-on-Trent, which is East Staffordshire, not far from Derby. And I moved to... we moved to Answorth, Birmingham, when I was about 4 or 5 years old. Of course, my dad got locked up in prison, so my mum moved to where her mum was in Answorth, and we lived there. So I started growing up.
How was that?
I was 5 years old. I can't really remember much. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. But what happened after that then? When did you start loving the
After that, obviously, you know, it was like five of us being brought up by my mum and my grandmother at the same time. We all lived in the same house down in Lozelles. You know, we never had much, but we got by on what she had, and you know what I mean?
Was it tough upbringing?
Yeah, it was tough upbringing, yeah. Yeah.
How was school?
School was all right. You know, it was all right, but when I end up having an accident with my sister, threw a can at me, I end up having a blind in my left eye. Mm-hmm. But then it was like going to school and people calling you Cyclops and one eye and, you know, just calling your names, and first thing I do, bam, bam, bam. And that's it. Yeah.
Is that where that fighting mentality started growing?
Yeah,
then?
Yeah.
People taking the piss, and you just
don't ask questions, just fight straight away.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Ask questions afterwards.
Mm-hmm. You've won trophies all over the world with the kickboxing.
Yeah.
What age did you start getting into that?
In my early 30s. Well, I started martial arts when I was about 10, 11 years old at school. I started doing judo. That was my first one. Then I went on to Shotokan karate, did a bit of Wadaru karate. And when I moved to Coventry, I started Dev Barrett's kickboxing club in Coventry. And that's where it all started, really. And that's where everything started kicking off.
Yeah. Because you're a big name in the casual scene. The Birmingham. Is it Zulus?
Yes, that's it, man. You got it right.
So how did that journey start for you then?
Oh, it started back in the early 80s. We were on, like, obviously, we were rude boys in Birmingham, but we were rude boys on the town. That means people call us townies. So we're on the town 7 days a week. You finish school, go home, change your school uniform, straight to town, and you'd be uptown to the last bus, catch the last bus back home. So we're on the town all the time. So obviously, rude boys, we didn't get on with skinheads, muds, rockers, whatever, we didn't get on with anyone. So, you know, like I said, everything that went uptown, we knew about everything. All the shops were getting broken. We were doing all that. We're just doing what we had to do to make money. But usually on a Saturday now, you get loads of skinheads coming into town. And we'd be having it off with all these skinheads. Most of these skinheads were the Apex, right? Mm-hmm. Birmingham City supporters. They were called the Apex first. Mm-hmm. So we used to, like, have it off with all these guys. And then you had a couple of black guys hanging on with them as well. Then black guys would be calling them coconuts and, you know, giving it to these black guys as well. Then as time progresses, we started getting friendly with these guys. And I think it was about 83, 84. Some guy said to us, "Well, you know, you like fighting, come down the Blues." So I thought, all right, then I'll go down there. So I walked in that, got in down the Blues with a couple of pals. And I walked into the ground and I went, "What the hell?" It was just full of boneheads, you know, skinheads. It was just full of skinheads. And they were still giving out the Bulldog magazine, which was a National Front magazine at the time. So they were all giving out that. And I stood there and after the game, and on the side of the Blues ground at the time, there was this wasteland, what we call like Bumpick. Mm-hmm. And everyone was just around there fighting. I thought, I'm liking this. But then I started going down every week. Started going down most weeks. But for me, it was it was into money. But we'd make our money uptown. Because what we call the town is we'd hang uptown. All the football fans, if you're going to Birmingham City, most of the time, you've got to come through town first. Then you're bumping into us. Mm-hmm. The town is. So then, you know, we'll be having off with the football fans when they're coming to town and robbing them, taking the clothes off them, taking the money off them, taking the jewellery off them and things like that.
Mm-hmm. What age were you then?
Oh, bloody. About 15, 16.
What weight were you then? Were you still a big lad?
Well, I was in, yeah, I was more into athletics and running and things like that. Yeah, so I was, yeah.
When did you start getting into the bodybuilding kind of side of things as well? Because I've seen photos of you in the 80s and you're fucking massive.
Even when I was about 17.
Massive.
When I was about 17, I started training, like bodybuilding. I've always, you know, even from school, I was always into bodybuilding. You know, I've been in English lessons and I'll be sitting down there drawing bodybuilding figures and not doing my bloody work. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's like when I left school, then I thought, I started training at a place down Newtown in Birmingham. I left there after a couple of years and I went trained at Dorian's for a bit. Dorian Yates' gym, Temple Gym. Then I left there and went to trained at a gym in Handsworth, body sculpture. And it just progressed from there with the bodybuilding. Because
mm-hmm.
I remember, you know, it's like, I was always in good shape. And I remember entering my first competition. And I was pissed off because I didn't win. And everyone says, Baz, you look good.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, if you can't beat him, you got to join him. You know, the people who come first, second and third, they're on summit.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So the other way you're going to beat them people is to join them.
Join them. Is that when you started dabbling into the steroids?
I dabbled a bit in it, but then when I started fighting serious, I had to get
Turn
off it.
Down, yeah.
Yeah, because I was getting drug tested and things like that. So, yeah.
So when I think of football casuals or that kind of scene, I think fat, baldy men, tattoos. I'm not looking at a 6'4", 6'4" kickboxer.
Nah, I'm only 5'11".
Are you?
Yeah,
you're fucking a lot bigger than what it looks, aren't it? How did people treat you then when they seen you? Obviously, the casual scene, you can't run away.
Yeah.
But looking at you...
Yeah, but it wasn't just me itself. Mm-hmm. You know, say like Birmingham, the Blues, Zulus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people think it's a black thing. It's, you know, it's never... Because we call it Zulus.
Why did the name Zulus come about?
The name Zulu came about in 1980, I think it was 85, at Man City Grange. I think someone just shouted... The Zulu film was big then, and someone just shouted Zulu, and that's where it all bloody started.
Mm-hmm.
But we're a multiracial firm. Black, white, pink, don't care what nationality you are, what religion you are, you're Blues.
How many people were in the firm?
Sometimes 400 or 500 proper lads.
What?
Yeah, good. Some good lads. Some proper lads. You know, sometimes you went to the football match and you're standing with a firm of lads, you know no one ain't running. There's no back... You know, you ain't going back nowhere. Oh, we've been beaten a couple of times. I'm not saying we're invincible. You know, most of these ex-football hooligans who come on TV and brag on books and, oh, we've never ran, we've never been beaten. Yeah, we've ran, we've been beaten, but...
What was your first proper tear-up?
Bloody hell. I think one of the first scary ones I went to when we played Coventry, back in the early 80s, we played Coventry away. And it was like, I was running for my life. All it was like, get the niggers, get the niggers, get the niggers. And I ran straight back to the train station.
Yeah.
And that one was scary.
Was there a lot of racial abuse then? 80s, 90s? Still happening to this day, but then.
Especially when you go to clubs like, when we play Tranmere. Yeah, a bunch of bloody black lads turned up at Tranmere, Wigan. They've never seen a bunch of black lads before. Thinking, what's going on here? You know what I mean? Is there a zoo in town or something?
How did you deal with that then? Did that make you more angry to go and actually want to fucking rip heads off?
Obviously, it didn't make me angry. It thought, listen, we're here. We're Birmingham City. We're here. This is us. You understand what I'm saying? No matter what colour you look at, this is us. We're here.
Did you feel as if you had stuff to prove?
Every time we went away at a football match, you had stuff to prove. Every time.
Who was
on my way, you always had stuff to prove.
Who was one of the toughest you went out against?
One of my toughest ones, probably Leeds as well.
Yeah, tough firm.
Probably tough firm.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Did you ever, was it just a pure buzz for you? Because even when you're speaking about it, that's the happiest I've seen him look. You're just smiling.
Obviously, don't forget, I was fighting at the time as well,
mm-hmm.
you know, professionally. And I was fighting at football matches as well. But it's a different type of buzz. You know what I mean? The football match is not in a controlled environment. Whereas the kickboxing and the MMA was a controlled environment.
What's the difference? Do you miss it?
I miss it. Yeah, I do miss it. Yeah. Come on, I'm 54 now. I've grown out of it,
mm-hmm.
but I still miss it. Yeah. You know, when I watch videos of like matches and things, I'll sit there going, "Oh, get in there, mate! I wish I was still there."
Yeah,
yeah.
Do you get right involved?
Sitting on my armchair. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
That's nuts, isn't it? Yeah. The passion's still there.
Yeah, the passion.
That's never going to leave you,
you
know, is it?
Just like my mum always says to me, "When are you going to stop fighting?" So mm-hmm. The day I stop breathing is the day I stop fighting.
It's in your blood.
Yeah,
DNA.
Yeah.
So now then, when you do it, when you watch it, do you feel, does it bring back a lot of memories for you?
Yeah, loads of memories, loads of memories.
Good but times.
Brilliant, not good times, brilliant times. But it's not as good today as it was back then, you mm-hmm. see. Things have changed.
Do you think, is it still going, the casual scene now?
Yeah.
Not as big?
It ain't going to stop, and the government ain't going to stop it, the police ain't going to stop it. You know, even though the police have got drones in the skies now and doing all this, whatever they want to do, they ain't stopping it.
How do you
get at the end of the day, the biggest firm out there is the old Bill anyway. So.
Yeah. How do you get treated now when you go to football matches or?
You know what? Just some of them are just ales. You know what I'm saying? some of the police are just ales.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still getting grief.
I still get grief. Yeah. Even though I'm not doing nothing, I just go down with a bunch, one or two lads. Especially like I prefer to go to the away games,
mm-hmm.
and I turn up down the away games, and obviously you got your Birmingham spotter there, and his spotter is telling the other police, "Oh, you're over there, you're over here, whatever," and you just get the police on your case and trying to antagonise you, and you know, for you to hit back at them,
try to get a reaction from you,
and damn right they'll get a reaction back at me because I ain't backing down to no one. I'm never going to beat them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always going to lose, but.
I'll too much pride to walk away.
Yeah, obviously.
So the kickboxing side of things, when did you start getting involved in that seriously?
It's back in the early 90s I started in semi-contact karate. You know, it's like, I call it like tig and tag. You know what I mean? that's what I call it, semi-contact. I call it tig and tag. Mm-hmm. You're not allowed to use excessive force on them. Mm-hmm. I started, you know, it's good for speed-wise. So I started in that. But then I was knocking people out all the time. You know what I mean? And then my trainer said to me, and then a guy called Howard Brown said to me, "Why don't you try continuous? That's more like a sparring, mm-hmm. but you still can't use excessive force." So I said, "All right, now I'll try that." So I went to a couple of tournaments trying that. And I thought, bloody hell, this is good. But I was knocking people out as well. So it said to me, "Why don't you go into full contact?" I mean, yeah, that's my type of fighting, full contact. Anything goes within reason, and that's it. And we started going to Holland back in the early 90s. Started fighting in Holland in some tournaments. And I was fighting at tournaments, but they put on a show at the end of the tournaments, and I was fighting on a show as well. But most of these shows, I was knocking people out. You know, I was more of an entertainer as well, because I'm the sort of one, I'll take the piss out of someone before I knock them out. So, you know, if you understand what I'm saying, I'll really take the piss out of them. And so this kept giving me fights in Holland. I was fighting in Holland. And it said to me one day, "Oh, we got loads of promoters coming down from Amsterdam, some big promoters. They've heard a lot about you. They want to see you." So I was, no problem. I think I was fighting a guy from Rotterdam. And it's the first time I ever looked at a guy and shit myself. This, you know, people think I'm big. I might be big muscular-wise, but I'm only 5'11". This guy was about 6'3", skinhead, big ponytail then. He was a biker. And I looked at the guy and I thought, I'm going to have my work cut out here. You know what I mean? It's going to be a real hard fight. But I dropped him two times in the second round and dropped him again in the third round, knocked him out afterwards. Mm-hmm. And I thought, yeah, and then all the promoters from Ireland coming over, "We want you to come and fight on this show, we want you to come to fight on that show." And one of them turned around to me and says, "Do you know what a mixed fight is?" I don't even got a clue what a mixed fight is. And he gave me a video and says, "Have a look at that video, this is a mixed fight." So when I looked at the video and it was all like stamping on them on the floor, kicking, punching on the floor and everything, I thought, yeah, I'll have a go at this. So it was 1999, I had my first MMA fight in Holland. And I fought a guy called Sander McKillian, big Dutch geezer. He had like six fights, won three or four or whatever it was anyway. But I took him apart. I really took the piss out of him and knocked him out. And everything just spiraled from there. Then I think it was 95, I fought in the World Championships in Ukraine. And I got to the final. I think I probably had two or three fights on that day. They said to me, you're fighting the finals on the next day. So I said, all right then. I was with the England squad. We're up in the stadium. I've took my gloves off, my helmet, and just sat down, fell asleep. Wake up, you got to fight. I mean, he says, I'm fighting in the morning. You have a fight now, get disqualified. So I had about 10, 15 minutes to warm up. This was a final World Championships. And I've got into the ring. And all of a sudden, this bloody thing's got into the ring like Spider-Man. he was up there like that. He was about six foot four or something. Uh-huh. I went, I haven't even warmed up properly. End up doing the fight. Fight went three rounds. And he won on points. His name was Vitali Klitschko.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. Obviously, yeah. Right. So after that fight, I got invited to fight for a world title in Hawaii, fighting a guy called Dennis Alexio. And Dennis Alexio, he started Van Damme in kickboxer, played Van Damme's brother in the wheelchair.
Oh, yeah.
I fought him in Hawaii.
Was he a real fighter?
Yeah, he was a real fighter.
Yeah, the boy with the black dart.
Yeah. Dennis Alexio.
Great fellow, Matt.
Yeah, how many times world champion and all this. And, you know, some of my fights, it's like I didn't train for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I trained for this one, but a lot of the fights I didn't train for him. When I'm getting $6,000-$7,000 a fight, I think, I don't have to train. Yeah. Win or lose, I'm getting $6,000-$7,000. Yeah. So sometimes I didn't even train. But I trained after this one in Hawaii. Got there, the promoter, you know, we had to do all these press conferences, go around the town, go down to Waikiki Beach, doing, you know, promoting the fight and all things like that. And I think it was the third round, it kicked me in my groin in the third round and split my box. I was down, you know, actually split my box. I was down for about 15, 20 minutes. And the promoter got in the ring and says, if you don't get up and carry on fighting, you're not going to get paid. So I got up. End up doing two extra rounds and I ain't doing no more. Stop the fight. And he won, but he always promised me a rematch. And because I think I'll give him a hard fight, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I never got the rematch.
No rematch.
Never got the rematch.
So with the fighting kind of thing, where do you get the, if you're not training as much, the natural ability to, does that just come from fighting since you were
just
young?
Fighting in the streets, fighting on football matches and that. I just love to fight. I'm one of them geezers. If I'm out with my missus or my daughter or something like that, and the guy puts it on me, I ain't gonna say, come on, mate, I'm with my missus. Leave it out. Come on. Nah. I'm saying, love, you go and wait over there. I'll be back in 5 minutes. And you know, that's the sort of guy I am.
Yeah.
I ain't backing down from nobody.
The fighting games, it's thriving now. Obviously, with UFC stuff.
Yes, man.
Do you miss thinking if I was 10, 20 years ago?
I had my first MMA fight.
1999. Yeah, 20 years ago.
20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
No one was really doing it much in England then.
Mm-hmm.
I know a guy from, I can't remember the guy's name, from Bedford. He was probably one of the first ones. We weren't heard of over here. But at the end of the day, I would never have got to the UFC anyway because of my eye.
Oh, fuck, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, no one knew I was
blocked. So you were fighting with the fucking one eye as well?
Exactly.
And you are still knocking people out.
I was still knocking people out. I've only ever been knocked out once in a fight, and I fought a French guy in Coventry.
Is he not a world contender, that guy, or something?
No, I fought a guy called Mark Emmanuel in Coventry. And he was on top of me in my guard. I made a silly mistake. I ended up getting knocked out. And then the place just went up. All the Zulus were there. Trashed the place, you know. Riot police had to come in the place, man. It's the first time my dad ever came to watch me fight before he died.
Shit.
So, and I was out on the canvas like this. I woke up with put their gas mask on, whatever it is. And I went, what the is going on here?
Yeah.
You know, there's police all over the place and ambulance crews all over the place.
That's some going though.
Yeah.
Were they fighting with the one eye? I forgot that.
Yeah.
So how did that, with your vision then? It must have been difficult at times. Or was it more natural?
It was natural because I've been blind in my eye since I was like 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So it would just come natural. You know what I mean? So long as I kept my guard up, I'm all right. I ain't seen nothing. I can't see over there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So long as I got my guard up, I'm good.
Just protecting it?
Yeah, just protecting it, yeah.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So you still fighting now?
No, I'm 54 now, I've retired.
Looks, you know, bad
worst,
or anything?
You know the worst thing about it? Not even my trainer knew I was blind in one eye until my last fight. Then I thought, you know what? I'm going to do an autobiography. I've done my book called One Eye Baz.
Mm-hmm.
And I've put in there, that no one knew I was blind in one eye until I retired from fighting.
Yeah. Is that because you wouldn't have been allowed to fight?
I wouldn't be. Listen, every medical I had to blag the medical.
So what happened if they had to do like an eye test and a couple of eyes?
Yeah. Oh, I said, I've got a sore eye. I've got something wrong with my eyes. I'd make up some crap and let you know. There's something wrong with my eye.
And you winged it that long?
Yeah, yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got away with it all every time I got away with it.
So your book, One Eye Baz, how did that come about? Was it Cass Pennant, your good friend?
People saying to me years ago, people saying to me, Baz, you should do a book. You know, you've got a good story to tell. You know, do a book. So I thought one day, you know what? One of my mates got hold of Cass and I met up with Cass and spoke to Cass and said, he thought, yeah, you'd do really well. And it took us about 2-3 years to do the book. And it went to number one bestseller in about two, three charts. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
That's phenomenal. Where can people buy your book? Because it's still available.
Amazon. I think most of the time, Amazon now, you can still get the book.
Mm-hmm. So as you were getting older, Baz, and you kind of calm it down a bit, what were you trying to, when you were going through it, when you said, right, I need to calm down a bit, what age were you then? 52.
Listen, I'm still the same person. I haven't changed much. You understand what I'm saying? Uh-huh. I'm a bit more wiser now. Mm.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, Tracy, would you?
Yeah. I'm a bit more wiser, but don't mess with me. You understand what I'm saying? I'm still dangerous.
Yeah.
Now, I just got to say, well, don't forget, I moved to Coventry 87 to get out. At the time when I moved to Coventry, the police were raiding people's doors for football matches. I can't remember what the operation was called. Raiding, kicking out people's doors and everything. So I ended up moving to Coventry in 1987, just after Coventry won the FA Cup. And it was hard moving to Coventry because I was getting abuse off the black guys and I was getting abuse off the white lads. The black guys didn't like me because I'm from Birmingham and the white lads didn't like me because I'm black and from Birmingham. So there's three of us went over at the same time because we all had girls over there. So three of us, my very close mates, ended up going to Coventry. And it was like, I had to look after them as well. You know, my close pals, man. Mm-hmm. You mess with them, you got to mess with me.
Brothers.
And things started progressing. I started working a couple of doors and making a name for myself. And it just went on from there. You know?
Because you ran a security firm?
Yeah, I had my own security firm at the time. And I was doing really well. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But I've been back over here now 8 years. I've done 28 years in Coventry and I've learned a lot. And there is some good people in Coventry. It's a shithole, but there is some good people in Coventry.
Yeah, I don't expect you to give it a compliment.
I've made some good friends in Coventry.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So now you do a lot of the homeless stuff, which is an amazing thing.
Yeah.
How did you get into that?
My wife did me head in again. now what it is, I've got an Asian mate, Bobby, mm-hmm. and he runs a dry cleaning business in Birmingham. He said to me, Baz, why don't you come down where I go on a Tuesday and have a look at we do feed the homeless people, but with a bunch of Indian lads. So I thought, all right, I'll come down and see what it's like. So I got down there. He said, oh, you got to put this over your head because these Indians, the Sikh, they like to, you got to serve, when they serve food, you got to have something on your head to cover your hair. So I went down there, started serving. I thought, you know what? After when I finished serving, I thought, I feel different towards people now.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? And I got home and I thought, you know what? I'll give thanks for what I've got. Mm. A lot of these people are sleeping on railway carriages and park benches and rat-infested places and all that. You know what I mean? I said to my wife, come down with me one day. And she came down with me one day. And she had a look and I thought, we said to each other, these homeless people, they need more than food. Let's start some up with ourselves right next to these Midland Langard guys, with Asian guys. You know, these Asian guys, they're out 7 days a week, 365 days of the year. No matter what weather is, they're out feeding people in probably five or six different cities. And so I thought, I'll team up with these guys, but we'll stand over there doing our bit over there. So we started doing clothes, toiletries, shoes, socks, everything what you can think about. We started doing that off the back of a van.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Some of my old clothes, I thought, and I got some nice designer clothes. And I thought, I brought them down there and just started giving them out. And it really got to me because one of my friends from school, came up to me and he was homeless. And he went, Baz, I was going, who's that? He went, don't you remember me from school? I was going, what the? You know what I mean? I thought, yeah, man. I'll give him a bit of change. And I started coming, he was coming out to me regularly. I was looking after him regular, but I haven't seen him. I haven't seen him for a long time.
Yeah.
But now we've got our own little Birmingham support, you know, homeless support. And we're doing really well.
Yeah,
we've got loads of donations off people and it's out there and we're doing all right, man.
Yeah, it makes you feel good. I think that's what the gift in life is. Yeah. When you help others, it's you automatically feels good.
And it's nice to give something back.
Yeah, definitely. And it's rewarding. Like I say, you appreciate things more when you go home.
Yeah.
Because we kind of take things for granted.
Yeah, so exactly.
You see people who are struggling and you help them, you realise they ain't got fuck all, but and some of them are the nicest people in the world. Some of
it reminds me of the very first time I went to Jamaica to stay at my sister's. And went to my sister's house. Fair enough, she had a bit of carpet in there. Nice TV. I said, I'm going to have a shower. Yeah, you got to go around the back there. There's no shower there. You got to go around the back. It's cold water. I went, I ain't having a shower in cold water. So I went off to my auntie's house. Because she just immigrated back to Jamaica. She had carpet, she had central heating and all this caper down there. And when I got back home, I realised what you've got at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like the TVs, what you got, hot and cold shower. You ain't got to go down to the river to have a shower and things like that, you know?
Yeah.
And like, I go a lot away to other countries. I like to go to other countries and see how they live in villages. And when I come back home, I appreciate what I've got a lot more.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's the way. For anybody who's trying maybe want to get involved or help you out or send you donations, if you've got a Twitter account.
Yeah, the wife will sort
of
that.
Send us all the links. I'll put all the links in the bio. Yeah. So moving forward for the future with you, Baz, what's the plans?
The plans? The future's bright, the future's orange. you know what? This year, I haven't made a goal this year. And this is the first time I've been out and I haven't made a goal. I just thought, I'll just carry on plodding along. But hopefully now, after Christmas, I want to set myself a goal, like I usually do.
Uh-huh.
And just plod along.
So why have you not been setting goals?
I don't know, just run out of... You know, last year was to do competitions.
Uh-huh.
I've done it. And I ain't doing no more. It's too much like hard work.
You won it?
Yeah, well, I won the qualifier and I come fourth in the British. You know what I mean?
So
I'm well happy with that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I need a goal for next year. So anybody who's got a goal out there,
send us it. We'll get them on it. Any more books or anything in the pipeline?
Well, they're hoping to do a film now of the book. So Cass Pennant was up last week doing some I brought him around Handsworth, show him and thing and
So how did your relationship with Cass come about from the Birmingham and West Ham? Is that not a bit of rivalry?
Obviously years ago, a couple of years ago, we had a box in Birmingham City and I brought the old school Leicester firm lads down.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought some other guys down from different clubs as well down there. But years ago, that couldn't happen. No matter how well known the person, you can bring them on your manager, you understand what I'm saying? And it's only when I started talking to Cass and he was going, I remember coming off the train at New Street and coming up through the train station and got chased all over the place by loads of guys under the ramp. I went, that was probably me and my boys.
Really?
But we get on great, you know. He's, I've got loads of work off him and I've helped him out and he's helped me out as much as we can help each other out.
Yeah, he does his own thing. He's got a podcast out as well, so check it out. Baz, actually, you did that podcast with Cass.
First podcast I've done was
his. He's good pals with Frank Bruno and stuff. Yeah. So, did you ever go abroad or anything, Baz, with the casual scene?
No.
Never?
I only went Birmingham, played in Europe a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time I've ever been abroad with football. I'm not an England supporter. I'm a Birmingham City supporter. Club before country.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
That's proper, isn't it?
club comes before country. So I've never been into going to watch an England game.
What age did you start supporting Birmingham?
When I was about 15, 16.
Yeah.
Yeah, I weren't into football before.
Just fighting?
Yeah, just fighting. Mm-hmm. I weren't into football at all. the closest ground to me was West Brom.
Yeah?
Yeah. Where I was living at the time, closest ground was West Brom. So I've been up to a couple of West Bromwich Albion matches.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I started coming down the Blues, a lot of the guys left, especially a lot of the black guys from Handsworth, left West Bromwich where they were supporting to come down to Blues.
Is that because you were there?
Probably, yeah.
Do you think if you went for a tear up with West Brom, you could have been fighting for them.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, yeah. Because
just anything for a fight, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, the only one I wouldn't turn up for is the scum down the road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How is the London rivalry and stuff with Birmingham? Who's your biggest rivals there?
Before?
Now. Before?
Before. I'd probably say like West Ham and that.
Yeah?
Yeah, West Ham. I've never rated Millwall. Never rated them at all. Probably have a good tear up with the other London clubs, but
yeah.
I've never really rated Millwall.
Yeah, because Chelsea and Millwall was a big rival there.
Yeah, Arsenal. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Chelsea, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's mad. Yeah. I can see with a smile on your face, Baz, that you know, it's still a passion for them, isn't it?
I tell you, the only time I've been to Millwall and you know, I didn't shit myself, but felt scared, was we played Millwall in the cup. And when we come off the train station, it was the old den at the time, when we came out of the train station and you're going to walk through a housing estate to get to the ground, mm-hmm. people on top of the roofs, throwing off chairs and throwing bricks and bottles, and police were there walking us with shields over us like this. And after the match, we came out after the match and it was like a riot zone. You know, burnt out cars, slashed up horses and things like that. That time, the old estate comes out for you. And that was a bit scary. Them times, you're just glad the police were there.
Yeah. What does scare you now, Baz?
Nothing.
Nothing. No. No misses, no.
No. Tell you the only time what scares me when I go to the dentist for a needle in my mouth. Shit myself.
Fake 100 men, but scared
of needles. I went for a blood test today and I was like,
That's mad.
Yeah, I went for a blood test a couple of years ago. Yeah, I passed out.
Did you?
Yeah, I passed out.
Fuck's sake, at least if I'm going for a tear up with Birmingham, I'm just going to take a bag of needles.
Yeah, I passed out.
Looking back at it all, obviously you miss it, but are you happier, like, kind of getting away from it at a certain degree?
You start growing up there. I'm in a better place now. You know what I mean? I got my lovely wife. Mm-hmm. I got four kids. I got three grandkids. Well, four grandkids. We've got another one on the way. And I'm good.
Do the kids go to the football?
Nah.
Try and keep them away from it?
Try and keep them away. Well, you know, one of my sons, he lives in Totnes. Down south, he plays rugby. I got another son over Coventry way. Mm-hmm. I got one daughter, she's 32. She's got a grandson and she's due another one soon. I got my other daughter, she's in Colville, she's got a granddaughter. Mm-hmm. So they're all spread out all over the place. Yeah. You know, to me now it's them grandkids time.
Family time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just wish I could see them more often. Of course, I'm always busy doing this, busy doing that.
Yeah, you're everywhere.
Yeah.
So what's a day to day? What's your routine like on a daily basis now? Because you said you're up at 5.
I'm up at 3:45 every morning.
Fuck's sake, Baz.
3:45, I have my porridge, I have my blueberries, I have my banana, I have about 4 egg whites, I have half a cup of black coffee. I'm in the gym at 4:45 every morning. Finish 6:30, come back home, grab something to eat, off to work, finish work, come back home, off to the gym again, finish the gym, home. I'm in bed by 8:00, mate.
Baz, that's heavy. You know what
I mean? And I do that 5 days a week. Mm-hmm. On the weekends, I work on the doors weekends. Mm-hmm. So I'm out till half past 4 in the morning. But I guarantee I'm still in that gym for 10:00 the next morning.
Do you sleep?
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah. Yeah, but I'd rather get up, go to the gym, and go back home and lie down.
Do you hit the bags and that at the gym?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you ever get into the boxing side of things?
Well, my, are you joking, man?
Oh, fuck, yeah. But back in the day,
well, I sparred with loads of boxers and that, you know.
Yeah.
Well, especially when I was fighting properly, I'd spar with a lot of boxers.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what do you think of the kind of boxing scene now? Guys like Joshua and
I think it's good, man. It's good for the English boxers as well.
Why do they never fight each other though? Money.
Money and politics, isn't it?
Isn't it?
You know what I mean?
They should be fighting Joshua Fury and a big boy from, is it New York?
Wilder. Yeah, Wilder.
He just knocked somebody spark out on Saturday.
Yeah, he's not even a boxer, man. He's just a brawler.
He never started till he was 19.
Yeah, well, fair play to him. The guy's a millionaire. He's done really well.
I think one of the reasons why he actually started is because his daughter was unwell.
Yeah,
so he started fighting, and then it's got him to where he is.
Yeah. Well, you can't even throw a jab properly, to tell the truth.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Just a big knockout.
Yeah, just a big swinger.
Mm-hmm. What's the biggest beating you've ever received from casual side of it?
Me? To tell the truth.
Never?
I haven't been beaten up.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a punch and that's about it. you know, I remember we played Millwall. It was, I think it was London Bridge, at London Bridge, after the game, and all the Blues were on London Bridge, and this guy comes to me, yeah, we're fucking Millwall, boom, boom. You know what I mean? I thought, well, you what? Bam, kick in the head, and everyone turned around and thought, what the bloody hell happened there? I went, he was giving it loads, so I had to knock him out. But I've never had a beating at a football match, no.
What's the big, have you ever came across anybody from another firm and done, he's a big lad, him?
Yeah, one or two, especially like that, even some of the Leicester lads.
Yes, you know, I think somebody's mentioned Leicester before and says they were nasty bastards.
Yeah. But, you know, you always get a good ride down Leicester, always. Always get a good ride down Leicester.
Did you ever concentrate on the result at football, or was it just...
What? No, I weren't interested in the result. Listen, if I know, say for instance, if I know we're playing the next day, right? I'm geared up for the next day, right? And I sometimes used to get up in the morning, start me stretching and getting everything. You know what I mean? Probably got to the gym beforehand.
Yeah.
I'm ready. Football didn't interest me. You know, back then I couldn't tell you who was playing for Blues. What the goalkeeper's name, what the left back's name was, I couldn't tell you, because I weren't interested in football. I was interested in what happened before the football, what happened during the football, and what happened after the football, and just get home safely. Hopefully without being arrested. Football didn't interest me, man. Didn't interest me until now.
Because you did a documentary with
Danny Dyer.
Danny Dyer. How was that for you? Did that enhance your reputation because everyone knew who you were then?
Not everyone, no. It did answer my reputation afterwards. You know, Danny Dyer is a wicked, unbelievable guy. He makes out to be some hard man.
He's not.
But away from the cameras, he was a lovely guy. Lovely guy. Mm-hmm. You know, and I still talk to him. And my wife talks to his daughter and talks to him sometimes as well.
So, how was that then when you did that? Because it was quite high profile.
Yeah, but when I did it first, I was thinking, am I making the right move by doing this?
Yeah, speaking out.
Yeah, speaking out. Because I've never told anyone I'm Britain's hardest man. If someone wants to tell me I'm a hard man, you tell me whatever you want to tell me. I'm gonna take it in. You know what I mean? So I've never gone around proclaiming I'm a hard man. So when the documentary was done, I thought, after it was done, I thought, I wish I didn't do it. Because I think every time I'm going to go out somewhere, I'll get guys coming up to me trying to put it on me. Oh, you think you're Britain's hardest man? But touch wood, it's never happened.
Yeah,
I've been out. All, you know,
I don't think that was fucking happening.
After Danny Dyer thing, the first place I went was Newcastle, and people coming to me, oh, I've just seen you on. You know, yeah. And then I was in a bar. And this guy comes over to me, and he goes, "You're on Britain's Hardest Man. You're that Zulu." And you went, "No, it ain't me." He went, "Yeah, man, it's you. It's one of Hartley Paul's top lads." You know what I mean? I thought, there you are. You know what I mean? But we got a nice man. It was nice.
Did that change things for you then? Because if you were getting a tear up at the football because everyone knew who you were you more of a target to get the jail or anything?
No. Probably more of a target with the old Bill.
Yeah, you know, that's what I'm meaning, yeah.
I weren't into covering up my face and say, yeah, I've done this, I've done that, I've done... I haven't done anything. I'm just one of the guys who up for a row. I'm just a soldier. I'm not the main guy or the Blues head man. I'm just one of the soldiers.
Yeah. Fuck that. A good soldier at that, man. If I ever start up a firm, you're getting the first phone call, Baz. So moving forward for the future, we know you're getting the film done. So what's the plans for you now? What are you going to get done? What's the plans? I know you want to get new goals and stuff and hopefully get this film.
I'm enjoying the homeless thing. And I just wanted to go a bit further with the homeless thing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm getting old now. I'm 54 now, so, you know what I mean? Calm down time, grandkids time. Get some slippers on and...
I can't see that happening.
Nor can I.
I don't know who you are trying to convince.
That ain't never going to happen, man. That ain't going to happen.
Do you feel fitter now than you did in your 20s?
Yeah.
Do you think it's just a mental thing?
Yeah, I think, yeah. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, the only reason why I train, because the way I see it, I'm a target, if you understand what I'm saying. I'm a target for people out there. You know, because all these guys who are up and coming, they all want to make a name for themselves. And most of the time, the only way they can make a name for themselves is by taking a name person out or by beating a name person. So I've got to keep on top of my game. That's why I still carry on training.
So you're fighting basically against yourself just to keep ahead. Keep on top.
You know, I'm me at the end of the day. I'm not a bully. People want to call me a bully. Call me whatever you want. I don't give a shit what people want to call me. You know, what you see is what you get with me. I don't mess around. I don't take no shit off anybody.
Mm-hmm. Rightly so. So, before we finish up, we'll give a shout out to your good lady there.
Miss Hello. P.
Yeah. So, how did you meet?
She stalked me for about 3 days. She stalked me. I was working in a designer clothes shop in Birmingham. Mm-hmm. And she came in there one day and I thought, fucking hell, she's a bit all right. I thought, I'll have a bit of that. You know what I mean? Yeah. And she looked at me and I looked at her. Right? But I didn't think nothing of it after that. I asked one of the lads who was working in the shop, give me a number. And he says he can't give me a number. He'll ring her and ask her if she can give me a number. And she came back in about 2 days later. Oh, I'm buying some clothes for my son. Yeah, whatever. You come to have a perv at me. You know what I mean? And it just happened from there.
Yeah. Yeah. And 10 years later, here we are. Yeah, because the place we are filming in Birmingham, you were actually going to get married to.
Yeah. The wife sorted everything out, but we're trying to get married here. But obviously, we wanted a Caribbean reception. I mean, Caribbean food and all that. And it says you can't bring in outside caterers. So we went to the Irish Centre instead. And it was a lot. We got it free, didn't we? I think we got the Irish Centre free because there was over 500 people there at our wedding reception.
That would have been fucking nuts,
man. Yeah. But the trouble is, the police tried to stop it.
Why?
Yeah, the police tried to stop it.
Because of the high-profile names?
Because of high-profile names and people that was coming down there. And Blues were playing home on that day as well. So a lot of people what went to the football match came down to the wedding as well.
After the game?
After the game. Ugh, unbelievable night.
Did you win that day?
I can't remember. You know. I was out of my face on the white rum.
Baz, would you like to finish up on anything?
I just want to thank you and thank everybody else.
Yeah.
And people that bought the book, people that donate to the charity. I just want to thank everybody very much.
Yeah. Thank Baz, you all. Listen, for taking the time out today and coming on, I really appreciate Thanks to Tracy. We'll put the links in the bio for the book, the charities that they work in, and amazing stuff that you're doing. Cheers. But it's been an absolute pleasure and I wish you all the best with the film and the future. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
You can also watch my podcast on my YouTube channel. The link is in the bio if you'd like to subscribe. You can follow me on my social media platforms to see who my next guest is. Follow me on Facebook at JamesEnglish11, Twitter, JamesEnglish0, Instagram, JamesEnglish2. You can also download these podcasts on iTunes or Spotify.